All right, George, here okay. we go.
Great.
Feel pumped? Feel good?
Pretty pumped.
All right. We're not going to put this in.
This is just us getting ready.
Everybody listening, we're not going to put this in the podcast. This is me warming up my voice.
Edit right over this.
Well, hello and welcome everyone who has ever come of age to the coming of age edition of Worst Scene, where we watch, as you may be aware, two movies, a great one and a not so great one. And we take the worst scene from the great movie and compare it to the best scene from the bad one. I, as always, am one of your co-hosts, Richard, and with me,
your sometimes but also always co-host, George.
Thank you, George. In today's podcast, as I mentioned earlier, we will be looking at two coming-of-age films, The Fantastic Lady Bird by Greta Gerwig
and The Unfantastic House of D by David Duchovny.
House of D. I really can't wait to talk about that movie. But before we get to that, we have our great film, Lady Bird. And when I say great film, I cannot begin to describe to you just how strongly I mean that. But I am going to begin to describe it to you because here I am doing so.
And I will also,
from the moment it started playing to the moment it ended, I've not had a movie in recent memory fill me with so much joy as watching Lady Bird, except for the moments where I was in tears. Mm-hmm. I had a smile plastered across my face this entire film. It blew me away. I loved every second of it. I couldn't believe how I was watching something that I know I'm going to want to watch again and again for the rest of my life because I loved Lady Bird. I just can't believe how good it is. I just can't believe just how great a movie it is. I am without words, wordless, as they say. If you have not seen Lady Bird, please see it. It is undoubtedly, along with Get Out, my favorite film of last year.
Yeah.
Certainly deserving of winning something at the Oscars. It's a shame that it did not. But what was it going to win? In a perfect world, maybe to me, something like Greta Gerwig either wins Best Director or Best Screenplay. Right. And then Jordan Peele wins Best Director or Best Picture.
Right.
And then
right.
Shape of Water gets Best Director or Best Picture. Like right. all three of these movies each win something instead of Shape of Water getting two of them and Get Out getting one.
Yes. Yeah, and I think as good as Frances McDormand is in Three Billboards, Saoirse Ronan, God damn it, I hope I said that right. Oh, fuck, I've been practicing all day. I think I might have blown it. Anyway, she, I was really pulling for her because that performance is so understated, not even understated, it's just real. Sorry, I don't want to cut in on your intro.
You should cut in because let's forget about the intro. Now we're just talking about this movie. Saoirse, as far as I'm concerned, Saoirse, is she? I was watching clips of her saying her name, so I would say it right.
Saoirse.
And she even talked about how she's not sure she says it right.
Right.
But she says,
There's a funny bit on the Independent Spirit Awards with John Mahoney and Nick Kroll. Yeah. Start an anecdote that you don't have all the details on, George. Okay, I can do that. where they really horribly mispronounce her name, and it's fun. But I really, her performances.
She's
all the performances.
Fantastic. I mean, my God, there's never anything that feels false. This movie feels real in a way that just so few movies accomplish, even really good ones. If you look at a movie like Rushmore, another great coming of age film, it still has a case of the quirks that makes it really funny, but it has a quirkiness to it that makes it unreal. It's a movie taking place in this mythological world of childhood. Lady Bird takes place very much in reality and captures it so well. And the cast, Saoirse is amazing. Mm-hmm. Laurie Metcalf as her mother, just incredible. Yeah. Lucas Hedges, mm-hmm. who was also in, he was in
Three Billboards.
He was in Three Billboards.
And he was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for
Manchester by the Sea. Mm-hmm. So he's got a great future ahead of him. We got Timothy Chalamet, right. who was in Call Me By Your Name.
Also nominated for Best Actor.
Yeah. That's, and Beanie Feldstein, who was fantastic yeah. as Search's best friend. Yeah. It's just,
and also the playwright Tracy Letts as the dad, and it's a very quiet performance, but effective.
It is, and so you know, Greta Gerwig set out to make a movie that captured her own childhood, but to be clear, as she is, it doesn't actually, it captures the Sacramento that she knew growing up because she was from Sacramento, but it's not really about her life, as she says in an interview with Rolling Stone. The core of the relationship in the movie is very close to me. It's not because that was how my mom and I were, because Laurie's character is nothing like my mother. But the core of it felt like this deep love and sense of conflict that comes out of the fact that you're essentially the same person as daughter and mother. And also, after seeing a screening, Greta's mom told her, "Greta, you wish I'd give you the silent treatment." And so, you know, it comes from her own experience, but it's not autobiographical. It's just she happened to be growing up at the same time as Lady Bird in the same Sacramento that this movie takes place. Anyway, I'm very excited about what Greta Gerwig does next, because yeah. for this to be essentially her debut film of directing on her own, mm-hmm. That's one of the greatest debuts of all time, just like Get Out is yeah. as well.
Yeah.
At any rate, I've rambled about this enough. I think I've made it clear how much I love Lady Bird.
Right.
George, tell us about the worst scene in this amazing movie.
Yeah, okay. I want to make a few points. Well, I mean, you've made a lot of points. This is really about the tone of this film. It is so natural. It's a yes. naturalistic film. It's not, nothing feels forced or melodramatic. It's all, it's just so real. I've been thinking about my own high school experience ever since the credits started rolling in this film. Even before that, all through it, it hasn't left my mind. It's been almost 2 weeks since I've seen it. And I love this movie. I agree with you. Get Out and this were my two favorites. Shape of Water was lovely.
Yeah, Shape of Water, very good.
Yeah. But I think that unlike those two, this one doesn't necessarily wear its influences on its sleeve, except for the influence of life, like just what it is to grow up and in a specific place with these specific people. And it just, that sounds like a really dumb thing to say, but it's fine. I'm day drinking, whatever. Shit. Now I've been to Sacramento. I'm not gonna be that. I think it's an amazing, the central performance that Saoirse, Jesus Christ, sorry, I'm sorry. If you ever hear this, I'm sorry. The performance is so good, and she's not American. She's not from Sacramento for sure.
No.
She's not from the United States. Is she English or Irish?
She's Irish.
She's Irish, yeah. So already right there, you know, what do you got? Frances McDormand, you're from America. Get out of here.
Get out, Frances McDormand.
Jeez.
At Saoirse's performance deserved to win Best Actress.
But it's smaller, it's simpler, you don't have these big crescendos. When we decided to pick it, and we really just, because we both loved it, I think you had just finished watching it, like, let's do this movie. Let's just whatever we can to like talk more about this movie. Immediately, I was struck by the thought that there's no bad scene in this film. It's there are some movies. I mean, I could probably find a bad scene in Get Out. I definitely could find a bad scene in Shape of Water. Find several in some of the other Best Picture nominees. But this one really felt like a challenge because it doesn't necessarily, there's not like set pieces or, I don't know. I mean, yes, there are scenes, but it all is a part of a whole, more so than a lot of the other films that you see in a year. More than you've seen a year. Jesus. Who talks like this? I guess I do. That's right, podcast friends. I talk like this. But so I really had to rack my brain. So my first thought for worst scene, it wasn't even a scene, because I've done this before where I don't pick a scene. just something. Like, I picked Jack Nicholson in The Shining, going back to episode one, for those of you who have not listened to those. So my first thought was, like, getting fucking Dave Matthews Band song stuck in my head would be my pick, because I hate that song. Oh, when you come crash into me, baby, and I come into I like that song because it's a movie, but, you know, it's just that idea that it's like, oh, great. Now, you know, 20 years later or whatever, 18 years later, it's like, this is stuck in my head again. Cool. The terrorists truly have won. We'll cut that line out.
But it's great up its timeline.
Yeah, it is. Actually, before we go any farther with this, or farther, if you haven't watched Lady Bird, you should watch it. We might have some spoiler-ish things ahead.
Please watch Lady Bird.
If you don't want to go to the theater, you can rent it on streaming services or buy it on streaming services.
That's right. It is available
where
all films are sold.
And it is well worth your hard-earned money. Take it from us. I couldn't pick the Dave Matthews because, yeah, that fits. We said earlier that the performances in this are all really naturalistic, really not showy. There's an exception. One very brief, and it's hard because I like this scene. It's the one thing that tiptoed towards being over the top and maybe crossed the line. And that's where the football coach takes over as the director of the drama club.
All right, let's have everyone take a knee. Huh?
What?
Cozy sit.
Now, I know you all miss Father Levyage. I can tell you that the brothers do too. But I'm going to give this thing my best shot. Now, usually I'm the JV football coach, but from what I can see, a play is a play.
And it's hard for me to pick this because I've actually met the guy playing the football coach. It's Bob Stevenson, who has my favorite scene in Fight Club, the baggage claim guy who is talking about dildos.
My suitcase was vibrating.
9 times out of 10, it's an electric razor. Every once in a while, it's a dildo. Of course, it's company policy never to imply ownership in the event of a dildo. We have to use the indefinite article, a dildo, never your dildo.
Anywho, I have met and hung out with Bob, and seems like a nice guy. But I had to pick this scene. It's just the one that felt a little detached from reality, although it's hard. Like, he's actually doing some great stuff. There's like a vulnerability there where he's scared. He's really scared out of his wits. Like, he's like, oh man, this is like, I got to talk to people. Like, we got to just, he knows he's out of his depth and he's trying to put it into context, you know, as we all do at some point. I feel like it just was allowed to slightly nudge over the line, like into the red. Barely. This has happened before. This is a very, very barely pick. I would not cut this scene out of the movie. I wouldn't do anything. I'd let it be. But it's the closest thing to a bad scene that I can find. Yeah, that's it.
There we go.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm right in the same place you are. Finding a bad scene in Lady Bird is next to impossible. Well, it's a short movie. It's an hour and a half. So there's no wasted space. And I'm not trying to pad it to increase the runtime. It's like they've cut this to the most essential thing.
There's no fat in this movie.
No, it's only what you need to tell this story. One of my potential choices was the one that you chose, though it's not what I went with. It does kind of stick out as being just needlessly comic in a movie that is naturalistic.
I think I know what you picked, but hold on. I'm playing a game with myself.
That's good. All right, good. Maybe we'll have you guess to see before I actually give my... also, initial meetings with Timothy Chalamet, whose name I'm probably saying wrong. Of all the characters, his is the most maybe stereotyped as to being the... rich high school philosopher, but at the same time, rich high school philosopher kids act just like that.
They do.
So that is correct way for him to act.
I've hung out with some dickbags just like that
kid. Yeah, holy shit. So he's just being what that person would be. So that's not bad writing. That's just, I just don't like that person.
Right. And in fairness, I've actually done that whole thing about, like, you know, cigarette filters have fiberglass in them. Like, I've actually said that to maybe 100 people. So.
I mean, he's sitting there reading Howard Zinn's History of the United States, and I'm like, oh yeah, I read that around the same time. So that's perfect.
Right.
So I'm not, even as a poor Southern child, I read that. But the... Just remind everyone I'm not wealthy as a child. But anyway, we'll cut all that out. Back to my point at hand.
Mm.
What is the worst scene in this movie? So I will say what I chose in a minute, George, but what would you like to guess I chose?
I almost think you're going to pick the job interview scene with the dad. I don't know why. Maybe just that the interviewer maybe is also sort of a caricature, but also not at all. I've worked with that person.
Exactly. You know? Me too. That person very much captures a certain Northern California, we'll say, style of interview and boss that you will find here just all the time.
Programmers nowadays are like kids, man.
I know. But that's why I think with me, you'll find something different.
Yeah, but they're like babies.
I hear you. It's wild, which is why I went back to school and got my MBA at UC Davis while still working at ISC.
Oh. Well, that must have been a lot of work.
It was.
I heard ISC is closing now, though.
I heard, yes.
So the assholes who fired you are now closing up shop.
Feels good.
Yeah. What else is supposed to happen?
Oh, I thought we'd talk about the position.
Working people just like that in San Francisco.
And in several jobs, too. This is not a specific.
And that's very much probably a real experience that that someone his age would have going in for a job interview, having to deal with this manager that's less than half his age, interviewing him and not even understanding how to run the interview.
Yeah.
And then hiring his son instead. Yeah. But my actual worst scene, it might be controversial.
Oh.
And that my worst scene in the movie is everything after she goes to New York.
Wow. Yeah. So there's a part of that that I thought that's the one thing that sticks out in my head. Is like,
Yeah, you can't cut it out. And there's lots of great things about it. When you actually, she gets all the letters from her mom and it turns out her mom had thrown them away. Because she didn't want Lady Bird to make fun of her or think that she was a bad writer, but her dad gathered them all up and sent them to her anyway, so she would see how much her mom cared about her. I mean, I cried at that.
Oh, yeah.
Everything else around it, it just feels like typical high school graduate going to college in New York sort of stuff. She goes to a party and throws up, makes out with a guy, goes on a long walk. There's a lot about that's just kind of normal.
Mm-hmm.
And we see so many movies about people being in New York, whereas the Sacramento experience is not very commonly captured on film. So it just stands out as, I've kind of seen some of this before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only thing about it that makes it weak to me, because it's not a bad scene.
Not at all.
It just, I feel like you could almost end the movie with her mom driving away and crying.
Wow, yeah.
And then her taking off. You could end it there and that's still a great movie.
Right.
But you have, I mean, you get a little resolution of of their continuing relationship after that. But that's my weakest scene. I might have ended the movie with her mom crying.
Mm-hmm. That sequence is amazing. When she's driving back to the airport return and then rushing. Jesus Christ.
Ah, it's beautiful.
It's
she wants to go in and say goodbye, but it's too late.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, I mean, that's like, wow. If that had been made for more than $10 million, she would have had to have met back up at the airport and they have their resolution before she goes off. And exactly. then it ends there. Studio notes or whatever.
Yeah.
Boy, I, yeah, I Interesting. I think the one thing that for me was, like, I guess when she is taken to the emergency room and that sequence was just kind of like, I'm not sure.
Yeah, that doesn't make.
Because that would also be a big deal. It's like a $10,000 ambulance ride or whatever it is.
And the notion that someone would call.
Yeah.
Because she just got sick after drinking too much. Why would someone call?
But it probably happened.
Yeah.
So, or didn't. I don't know. It certainly
happened to somebody.
It definitely happened to somebody. Yeah. I mean, I almost got an ambulance ride. I thought I was having a heart attack when I was 21. It was just a panic attack. So, yeah,
there's some of that, but there's a lot of it that's also,
yeah. And we are really, really kind of like with a fucking high powered microscope trying to find just like a tiny grain that we don't mistake us for wanting to dig in this. I think with yours, it's really more like familiarity breeds contempt.
Yes, exactly. It's still great.
Yeah. There's not a frame of this film or scene that I would cut out. I think it is as close to perfect a movie as I've seen in a very long time. I think the last time a film made me feel like this, I know it's going to sound pretentious, but Moonlight. Really, I floated out of the theater.
I agree with you. Moonlight's another, which we should cover on here, another sure. perfect film.
Yeah.
And also about someone coming of age.
Right.
And it's obviously told in a very different way.
Yeah.
But yeah, Lady Bird, as I said at the very beginning to end, I was just in wonder at what I was watching. Because I was watching greatness. I was watching something
effortless.
That's perfect.
Effortless greatness.
At no point do a movie about Lady Bird says this movie's going to be quirky as fuck.
Right. Sure.
And it is not. It is quirky in a way that a human being would be quirky.
Even the poster and the font, it's just, it's kind of you. Yeah. Right. You come in with this preconceived. I came into it thinking, I really hope I don't hate this. I really hope it's not going to kind of annoy me or something the way that say, was it 500 Days of Summer?
That movie is terrible.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, that movie's like The Last Jedi or something. it was wonderful to see that was not this. Because even Francis Ha was quirky as shit.
Yep.
Likeable, but really, really overly quirky. But even with Francis Ha, there's an autobiographical feel and a quirkiness, but there is still like a weight. There's a center. And I just feel that, I don't know, Lady Bird is, it's so real. It's so, I think we've praised the shit out of this movie. There's a giant fly
that came in here.
Welcome to the podcast, Fly.
Welcome to guest host, our guest host, The Fly.
And what was your best picture of 2017?
Yes, I agree.
Call me by your name. Interesting.
All right, so that's Lady Bird, our great film, which means it's time, George, for you to introduce our bad film, House of D.
All right, well, House of D was written and directed and is co-starring David Duchovny. Duchovny said that he wrote this screenplay in 6 days. Had a budget of $6 million. Did not make it back, I don't believe.
No, I think the exact number was around $380,000 that this movie made at the box office.
Yeah.
Did not do well.
No, it has an interesting cast. Other than Duchovny and his wife, Taya Leone, it also has the great and sadly departed Anton Yelchin. It also has Robin Williams kind of in trying to get an Oscar nomination mode. Erykah Badu is in it. And this film was not a hit with audiences or critics. In fact, I would like to read some of Roger Ebert's review.
As I was hoping you would.
Okay, let's see. During a movie like House of D, I jot down words I think might be useful in the review. Peering now at my 3x5 cards, I read sappy, inane, cornball, shameless, and my favorite, doofusoid. I sigh. The film has not even inspired interesting adjectives, except for the one I made up myself. And then he later goes on to define doofusoid, adjective, possessing the qualities of a doofus, sappy, inane, cornball, shameless. in the example used. The plot is composed of doofusoid elements. It was a 1.5-star review. Like Lady Bird, this tells the story of an awkward kid coming of age, attending a Catholic high school, dealing with a difficult mother, and they have a best friend. But unlike Lady Bird, this film is a melodramatic slog with one of the worst screenplays I've ever heard. Take a listen.
My son Odell is turning 13 today. And for his birthday, I'm going to tell him my secret. I'm going to tell him, you know how in old movies when the bad guys want to break into a safe, there's this one guy, the safe cracker, who puts his ear up to the lock and listens as he dials the combination, listening for what they call in English the tumblers. Because when the number is right, there's a click, and he knows with the click he's breaking in. Well, in a man's life, there's a tumbler too, and I think that number is 13. When there's a click, and a boy breaks into manhood, and the safe of his life opens up, and shazam, there are all the riches of what a man can hope for and hope to be.
Oh, God. So that's the opening monologue, all right? That's the beware all ye who enter. So I'll read you some of my notes that I wrote while watching this movie. God damn it. Fuck this movie. Fuck you, leave my emotions alone. And then later on, spoiler alert, later on when we see Robin Williams as an old man, I said this out loud. Fuck me. While watching this, we began to question whether or not we actually are able to like David Duchovny anymore. As great as he is as Agent Mulder on The X-Files, it's just kind of like, what is his wheelhouse? I mean, that is it. It's just Mulder. And he does try some emotions in this film and fails. It's terrifying. It's a terrifying movie. I think I can, you know what? Instead of just explaining it, let's take a listen.
Run, Tommy.
I don't have to run anymore, lady. I can walk now.
God damn. That being said, there is a truly great performance in the center of this film, and that is by Anton Yelchin. He's so real and open and honest and vulnerable, this film does not deserve a performance of this depth. It would be actually more at home in Lady Bird, I think.
And also, I think it speaks to how strong his performance is that his career survived.
Sure, sure. But I mean, this is a little movie, you know. And actually, I remember seeing Duchovny on a talk show talking about this, and I thought, oh, I'll see that. But this is very much of its time, that kind of post or like mid Miramax boom 90s. Or it's like, I guess it is post 90s. So, but it really stinks of that.
Very 90s, even though it's 2004.
Yeah, but I mean, it just stinks of that like Oscar bait, shitty fake indie movie thing. Well, God. With that great intro, hey, Richard. I mean, it's short, but I think we're going to get into some other stuff later on.
Yeah.
What's the best scene in this movie?
Ah, great. Much as I struggled to find a bad scene in Lady Bird, and didn't really find a bad one, I found one that I thought was weak compared.
Yeah. We made two entirely half-assed picks there.
Yeah, we did, because there's just no wasted... Yeah.
And go fuck yourself.
No wasted frame in Lady Bird, whereas every frame is wasted in House of D, a movie that should never have been written or made. It is an embarrassment. It is inept. As I sat through Lady Bird with just a huge grin on my face, except for when I was crying, I just sat slack-jawed through House of D.
Yeah.
Just in awe of how terrible it is, especially when it comes to the script, which, as you know, is one of the most poorly written things I have ever encountered in my life. Every line is just dead, terrible. Like, first year in high school wants to be a screenwriter, and this is their first script they've ever written style writing. It's no surprise that David Duchovny did not write any more movies or direct any other films after this, because it would be foolish to allow him to do so. It is awful in every way, but yet A couple of things to note before I get into my supposedly best scene.
Sure.
One, I've watched this on Amazon, using the Tribeca trial.
Yep.
Because this premiered at Tribeca Film Festival. The sort of thing you can do when you have David Duchovny tied to your film.
Yep.
And it is his, it's not just tied to it, it's right. his movie.
You can also get Hans Zimmer to consult on the music.
Yes, he clearly only consulted because the music in this movie is also at the Hans Zimmer level.
No. It's like, oh, you couldn't afford to get Whiter Shade of Pale, so you're using someone doing a sort of riff on Whiter Shade of Pale or the Rolling Stones. Got it. Hey, that's fair. Like, that shit is expensive. It and is. As a struggling filmmaker, I would think that, well, no, he's David Duchovny.
He's David Duchovny. It's had a $6 million budget, which is, say, four times the budget of Moonlight. obviously.
And Lady Bird was a $10 million budget. But so what would $6 million be in 2018 monies?
That would probably be double that at least.
Yeah, so
anyway. Well, we'll say it's $10 million, so they're each made for the same amount of money. And one of them is truly amazing and one's not, as we're talking about right now. So where was I on House of D?
Wasted scenes.
Wasted every frame. A waste, every line trash. Mm-hmm. Oh, and then I was watching on Amazon, and then at the bottom it tells me other movies watched by people who watch House of D, and it's just a bunch of shit and garbage. That the people who watch this movie also watch this other trash. Maybe you would like it. Interestingly, so Lady Bird gets 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. Yes. Whoever gave it a negative review is one of the contrarians, of which there are at least a few in the critic world. House of D got a 10% on Rotten Tomatoes. Mm-hmm. However, if you look on IMDb at how the audience of people rating them on IMDb, they're almost rated exactly the same.
Wow.
With House of D getting a little over 7 and Lady Bird getting a 7.5.
Huh.
Which really annoys the shit out of me because Lady Bird's really
you got a lot of Duchovny fanboys or
yeah, people just going and liking
fan
it,
whatever's
even if they haven't seen it.
Fan people, why don't we just say fan
people? And then you've got plenty of people going on IMDb and not liking Lady Bird because it stars a woman,
right?
So it's that's the internet
star woman, it was written and directed by a woman.
It's gotta give that one star, goddamn fucking internet. So,
yeah,
what is the best scene in this movie that I have just trashed?
Yeah.
Let's talk about the three possibilities.
Yeah. That put down okay. I've got three
as potentially
too.
Good.
Let's see.
So, and these are scenes where I feel like the movie almost succeeded at what it wanted to do. One, after his mother overdoses and is brain dead, and she overdoses because I got expelled from school, so it's all his fault. So goddamn melodramatic. He comes home and his mom's second cousin is there to take care of him, and they're real assholes to him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Jesus, his mom just died. What the fuck's wrong with you? Anyway, that's not good. But there's a mildly touching moment where he goes to the bathroom and her cigarette butts are in the toilet. And he fishes them out because she always put her cigarette butts in the toilet.
Right.
And that was moving. That's something that's a last memory of her. Where these cigarette butts, they used to see her put out in the toilet, and he fished three of them out to keep.
I like that, even though there's cigarette continuity there. Like, there's obviously two different brands of cigarettes.
Very good eye. As a non-smoker, I didn't catch that. Of course, you don't smoke either, but you have in the past.
Yeah, there's a Camel Light and there's an American Spirit Light in there.
Very good. Well, we got to cross that one out, obviously, for the reasons you just stated. also, when he comes back, when David Duchovny comes back later and is meeting with Robin Williams' papass, occasionally I feel fine with it.
I guess
this feels genuine, their interaction with each other.
Robin Williams is a great actor. A great actor.
Yes, he was. And in that portion, it feel their conversations feel natural. Like you can actually feel the friendship between them still exists there. And I like that just fine. Like, this is fine. The whole thing when he comes back to New York, all this is all right. The other thing that feels weird to me when he comes back to New York is that his son, his French son,
right,
just speaks in a normal American accent, yeah, as if he does not live in France with a French-speaking mother. I mean, that's the least of my worries.
Right. But, I mean, there's a part in the France thing early on where she, like, his wife doesn't know anything about him, and I actually yelled at the screen, "Why the fuck don't you know this about the guy you got married to and had a kid with?" Like, and then, and then the next line of dialogue is, I hid this from you, or, you know, like, we'll play it here.
I was in the habit of never telling anybody anything about my past, but when I was falling in love with you, every morning I'd wake up and I'd think, today's the day I'm going to tell her, and every morning I'd say nothing. Eventually, just too much time passed, and I felt that if I told you now, you get scared and disgusted that I could lie so well and so long and you'd leave me.
Oh, so you answered exactly what everyone's yelling at the screen.
I yelled that same thing and said, oh, whenever that came on. Oh, thank you for answering.
Fuck.
Oh, this movie has so much so much narration, as so much bad narration.
Yeah, sort of. And then it sort of doesn't. I don't know.
Yeah, and also... So David Duchovny, before I get to my actual best thing,
right,
David Duchovny's character is supposed to have been such a good artist that he went to Paris after his mom died, like ran away there, lived on the street, and used his artwork to start doing illustrations for magazines in France. And yet the drawings that they show him make are not of a level of quality, right, that would get you hired by any magazine, right, anywhere. And I have to believe that David Duchovny drew that,
right,
instead of hiring an actual artist.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the stuff that, is it Wes Anderson's brother that does all the art for those movies? And it's just, it's that kind of childlike.
And it's childlike, but in
that Hallmark card kind,
yeah,
of way.
Very, so
maybe
Hallmark,
maybe
card.
He was there doing illustrations for the French version of Hallmark.
Yeah, maybe he, oh yeah, there you go, he was doing Hallmark shit. Maybe, yeah, maybe he was,
hey man, yeah, I don't need all the things answered for me, man. I can let the I can let the world of the movie live on.
That's fine. That's,
it's like,
fine,
it's like a David Lynch film. It's, you
just
don't need all
just
the
that
answers.
Art plays a pretty major role.
No, it's true.
And it's really bad. But I mean, this movie, if anything, was like a bad Lifetime film. A lot of Lifetime movies are watchable.
Like if there was a Lifetime network for men instead of, you know,
why is, like, there no Lifetime network, right, for men?
Right. It's like, well, you know, we had the Spike network, I guess.
yeah, if there was a Lifetime network,
yeah,
for
we
men,
like bikinis and barbecues. Ugh.
This would be one of the bad films on the, right, Lifetime network, right, for men.
Yeah, who is our Tori Spelling? Like, we're talking about
after this,
Dean Cain.
I'm gonna give it to David Duchovny. No, Dean Cain is our Tori Spelling.
Yeah, but he's also Lifetime Network's Tori Spelling too.
Yeah.
This is getting
we're getting too far afield. let's come back to my best scene in this movie. It involves Frank Langella.
Oh, interesting.
Who is like the head of this Catholic school that he was in. There's this one scene where he is teaching ethics to the students, and Frank. I was listening to an NPR interview with David Duchovny about this movie, and he made a real interesting statement to me that I yelled no to when he said it. And he's like, I think we have a lot of pretty funny scenes in this movie. And I said, no, you don't. But the one time where
I did laugh at this scene,
I chuckled, yeah, once was Frank Langella was mildly funny.
Called the separation of church and state, this class will no longer be called Bible study. It will be called ethics. Well, that's my civic duty done. Now open your Bible's voice to Genesis 19:4.
And it feels like it captures this boys, this Catholic school thing that he wanted to capture elsewhere and didn't. It felt like it felt right here.
Right.
I laughed. He's throwing stuff out the window, like throwing pieces of paper out the window. And we see Robin Williams' character gathering them up, and he keeps them for later.
Right.
And that all felt... that felt close to real.
This is the air quotes scene where they have to change the name of the class. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They have to change the name of the class from something biblical to ethics. And that I was like, oh, okay. If the rest of the movie was at this level,
and you can't see it, but when he's saying these things, he's got fake air quotes up because he's not allowed to say the You know, yeah.
And Frank Langella brought a certain air of, I don't need you to direct me in this
right.
role.
I mean, he brought that even to Masters of the Universe as yeah. Skeletor.
Yeah, there you go. So that's my best scene. It was one of the few where I felt like, oh, this is fun. So now, George, what's your best scene?
Well, you know, I also thought that that was, there was something nice about that. The reason I almost picked that scene is what Robin Williams does, which is very minimal. He's just sitting below them. I don't think they even realize he's down there yeah. and enjoying his lunch. And he's every time another wadded piece of the Bible comes down, he's got this grin on his face. He's so happy to receive it and happy to. It's a testament to how good Robin Williams is that he is actually able to do almost minimalist work. I mean, for him, it's minimalist because he was so full of energy and that chaos that. Sorry, I'm spitting as I talk. That sort of Tasmanian devil energy that Robin Williams had. I didn't pick it, I don't think. Let me see. So I'll start from the beginning. It has only been 3 sleeps since I watched this movie.
How many sleeps will you be away? How many sleeps do you come back?
So the easy pick would be the hospital scene where Anton Yelchin is hiding under the table while the doctors try to save his mom. Like I said with Titanic, in the hands of any director, talented or otherwise, this scene is going to have an impact on the audience. It's easy. It is really, really easy. And I thought it was well done. I'm not going to pick it because literally, it's one of those things that, like, as bad a director as Michael Bay or David Duchovny can make you feel something. I thought about what you were talking about earlier, Robin Williams, when he's talking about his dad.
My dad died a lot of sleeps ago. Cancer ate him, just like your dad. Cancer is the crab on the horoscope. Crab dinner, $6.95, all you can eat.
I'm sorry, pal.
It's okay, because the crab ate all the hard parts first. The mean parts. The parts that hate me being retarded. Just before he died, when he was only mostly dead, he was so nice. Because only the soft parts were left. He was the nicest guy in the world. He hugged me and he told me over and over, he loved me, loved me, loved me.
I didn't pick it because I still can't get over that fucking makeup. It's in like the gut so and the makeup. It's just bad. It's so bad. And like that, there are like 3 credits for the people who did the makeup. Like there's like these big kind of epic heroic credits for the makeup. It's like, I mean, really, when he stepped out, it's like, oh fuck, oh fuck, that's bad.
Yeah, same thing. Erykah Badu's makeup looked
right,
pretty bad.
Right,
too.
Right. You know what though? We're missing. There's something we haven't talked about. So this film was made in 2004.
Yeah.
In 2004, David Duchovny was married to the actor Taya Leone.
Yes.
In this film, Taya Leone plays David Duchovny's mom. early on in this film, not early on, from the fucking first scene with her.
How was school?
Fine.
How was work?
Fine.
Want me to wash your hair?
No, thanks.
This is beyond, is it Freudian? Is it, I mean.
A real weird.
Yeah, it's just, there's a lot of stuff with like motherhood and breasts and shit that's hinted at, like with the French woman, right? In the meat shop. Meat shop, that's what they call them, right? You go to the meatitessen?
Some other word that people use for...
Well, we'll never find out. But man, that the director and star casts his wife to play his mom to the teenage version of him. I mean, I don't know a lot about psychology or psychotherapy or a lot, but there is something Freudian there, right?
Right. Yeah, but, I mean, it's uncomfortable. This movie is beyond that, very uncomfortable with its weird sexual references beyond that.
Yeah, the film basically ends on a fucking boner joke.
It does. Ends on a boner joke and ends with...
Like, I've got notes that just say boner joke. And then in bigger letters, boner joke.
Just a lot of adults, like Robin Williams talking to David Duchovny's son about hair growing on his balls.
Well, we've all done that. I've talked to David Duchovny's son about that, too.
I mean, it's true, but in a movie.
Oh, in a movie.
Elevated
right.
A little bit
more. You don't want to have it captured on film.
No. It's just a lot of a lot of just awkward
things. Yeah. So I had to point that out. I realized that we've gone this far and we haven't mentioned the elephant in the room. The fly is back, by the way, and the fly agrees with us that that was awkward.
The fly is definitely very agitated.
Very, very agitated. So my pick, it's a scene right before the dance, and Anton Yelchin and Taya Leone are playing basketball in their small one-bedroom apartment. And there's something about the scene. Their interaction is really good and really natural and real, much more so than the Richard Nixon I'm Not a Crook thing earlier on, which was so creepy, so weird.
Yeah, it really was.
It was just like, maybe we should never do this show again. Like, just end the podcast. If it means we have to watch this, I mean, I would rather just not. But this scene where they're playing basketball was so, it was so good. It was so real. I felt actual connection. I felt actual humanity. And then when he leaves, when the door closes and she sits on the bed and she is alone and is just so totally alone. I'm a fan of Taya Leone. She's great in, Deep Impact, the really depressing Meteor movie versus Armageddon, which is not depressing. She's great in that film. I mean, I think really great. And it was like an odd choice, but perfectly cast for that film. And in this, like, this scene shows off what she can do with no dialogue. It's just, she is so alone. She communicates that so well. I really, really identified with that. I know what it is to feel really alone and isolated and basically an island in the middle of a sea of humanity. And so that is my pick. I think that is a great scene. It's in a shitty movie, but it is a fucking great scene. It's the one bit of her performance that feels natural and real in this film.
That's a good choice.
Yeah. I mean, I sat up in my chair. I was like, oh, there's electricity. I felt real work happening. And
it was hard for me to choose anything from their interaction because every time she came on screen, I was like, the fact that that's not explored, I think it's almost like David Duchovny's treating it as normal that his mom is coming in while he's taking a shower, mm-hmm. and offering to wash his hair when he's 13. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, everybody will empathize with this. Like, no, actually.
No. It also feels like way too easy a explanation for weirdness. It's a cop-out city. Not cop-out, but it just, I don't know. It's I'll throw this in there and it's going to make sense. That's my David Duchovny impersonation.
That's very good. I'm sure that's
this will read
pretty accurate. Read. And then the whole thing with Erykah Badu being in prison, mm-hmm. and teaching him lessons via a small mirror that she holds and yells out the window. First, if he was actually in prison yelling down four stories down to a kid on the street, everybody else in that prison would have said, shut the fuck up.
Sure.
The people would have been screaming, shut up.
Or they all would have been yelling shit.
Yeah, they all would have been like, hey, how you doing? They would have been talking. They would not have been, it would have just been silent except for her standing by her window talking down to him. And just having her and Orlando Jones be the only black characters
in the movie,
a pimp and a woman in jail.
Yeah.
That's come the fuck on, man. That really bugged me. Her telling him to go be a pimp.
Right.
Like, shut up. What are you? God damn it, David Duchovny. Fuck you for making this movie, man. that's my message to you.
Uh-huh.
Fuck you for making House of D. A couple of things as we play one of our shorter episodes, because rarely do we have such a great movie, but against such a bad one where it's so easy just to get to the
I do want to say again that I can't not recommend House of D because Anton Yelchin is so good in it, and watching this film, it was hard for me to actually detach the tragic element of this, that he's gone too young, and then also that Robin Williams has given so much great stuff and then he's in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Anton Yelchin, I feel like everything I've seen him in, he gave his all. He never hedged it. He never phoned it in. And there are people who have made a lot more money and a lot more films and won a lot more awards than he ever would have that have absolutely phoned it in. I'm talking about Harrison Ford, and I'm talking about Bill Murray. And, you know, it's like all these people that everyone loves have had movies where they've dogged it. And I feel like Anton Yelchin doesn't really, at least he didn't have that in him.
Yeah.
So there.
There you go. Anton Yelchin is great.
Yep.
I would recommend this as perhaps the last Anton Yelchin film. Like, you get through everything else he's made, and then like, I just need to see something else with him in it.
See a very young performance.
You can watch House of D. Yeah,
apparently he replaced Shia LaBeouf in this. So
good for this movie, because this...
Look, as much as Richard and I both think that Indiana Jones 4 is the best Indiana Jones film, Shia LaBeouf is no Anton Yelchin.
He is certainly no Anton Yelchin. Interestingly, as you say, Indiana Jones 4, because at some point we'll have this.
We will have.
So yeah. I can't talk about...
No, let's save it.
Yeah, that's... Forget it, folks. Yeah. I know you want to hear it. You want to hear our opinions.
Coming soon in the future.
Indiana Jones 4 versus one of the good Indiana Jones coming to you on this podcast.
What if we did Indiana Jones 4 as the good movie and like found something that was far inferior to that?
Good luck.
Yeah.
Indiana Jones 4 is the good movie versus
King Solomon's Mines starring Richard Chamberlain.
I think I
Firewalker starring Chuck Norris and Louis Gossett Jr. Oscar right, winner. Yeah, I've got them. They're all, I can call them up in my head. So
that will be our 100th anniversary episode.
Yeah.
That brings us to the end of the podcast, where we decide, and this is going to be another easy one, I think, where we decide if the worst scene in the great movie is better or worse than the best scene in the bad movie. And George, I'm going to toss it to you to kick us off.
It is not that easy for me. I really think that what Tay Leone does in that sequence is really, in that scene, I keep saying sequence, really, I guess I mean scene, but it is there's like a montage.
There's a sequence of frames
that
make up the scene.
Thanks for humoring me. I always appreciate it. Her work is so good there. It is a very subtle scene, and therefore one of maybe two subtle scenes in the film. Did we mention how good, actually? Yeah, we did. The Robin Williams at the airport.
Didn't mention that. He does it. Robin Williams at the airport is very good.
He's great.
What the Sam hell is going on here?
Sir?
I'm not going to be late to work because of you.
I'm sorry, sir. I'm just doing my job.
Me too. See this uniform? St. Andrew's School for Boys. Assistant janitor. I don't think you're going to be very happy if I have to call the Reverend Duncan down here to talk to you.
Who?
Reverend Duncan.
Look, I'm a Christian too.
Good. Now give the kid his ticket.
That was one that I almost picked. That whole sequence, because it's a couple scenes. Tay Leone versus Bob Stevenson. That's tough. And it's I hung out with Bob at a party one time. Boy, this is hard. I'm going Tay Leone. House of D is going to get one award. I don't think it's won any awards.
I don't think so.
It's won an award for me. That's for Tay Leone.
Well, congratulations, David, to pick up your award. Please come by our offices.
I think Tay Leone, because she was in the movie directed by David Duchovny.
We're just giving it to the movie. You're right. Yeah. That was wrong of me to do. Tay Leone, if you would like your award, please come by our offices between the hours of 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. Monday through Friday at Worst Scene San Francisco.
And if you'd like to co-host our Meteor Comet episode coming soon, let us know at Meteor Comet at Worst Scene.
So for me, is the scene with Frank Langella teaching ethics at school, is that better than the sort of mixture of things that happened at the very, very end of Lady Bird? And the answer is straight up, absolutely not.
Yeah.
The end of Lady Bird is fantastic. It just happened to me to feel it just felt like unnecessary, too familiar compared to the rest of this amazing movie, but it's still great. So there's no way in hell any individual frame of House of D could ever defeat any individual frame of Lady Bird in my mind. So worst scene in Lady Bird is better than the best scene in House of D to me, which means, unfortunately, folks, since there's no agreement, there are no deals or coupons to any of our partners.
Charlie.
But tune in next time to see if you can get a sweet deal at one of the Yum! Brand restaurants of your choice. With that, I think we have reached the end of today's podcast, unless you have anything to add, George, before we go.
I don't, but it's been a wild Oscar season. I'm good. I think that, if you want to talk more about House of D or Lady Bird, just find me on the street, and I'll be happy to talk to you there, or we can go have a beer. And anyone.
Yeah, the offer's open.
Yeah. Just send an email to talk to George about Lady Bird and House of D at Worst Scene.
Perfect. For me, you will need to schedule an appointment. I am not as open to you just approaching me on the street like that, but you can also use a very similar email, which is schedule an appointment with Richard to talk about Lady Bird and House of D at worstscene.com. But with that said, we have now reached the end of the podcast. And so what should we... You know, we usually have a sign-off based on the movie that we're doing. So anyway, everybody, thanks for listening, and definitely be sure to crash into me like a boy's dream.